Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of Five Things. I'm Eve Chen, a consumer travel reporter for USA Today. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're speaking with one of the most beloved and accomplished classical musicians of our time, a UN ambassador for peace and founder of Silk Road Ensemble, Yo-Yo Ma, about his latest project, Our Common Nature, which is taking him to all sorts of natural spaces to play music and share in the culture of those places, while connecting with various people invested in preserving the land for generations to come. Welcome to Five Things, Yo-Yo. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's so great to be with you. And I'm so excited to talk about anything you want to ask me.
Terrific. You have described music as a lens to explore everything. What have you learned through Our Common Nature, and what do you hope others learn from it?
The study of nature and of ourselves, our common natures, in a way, gives us, again, not only perspective, but it starts to give us different kinds of tools. Number one, not only where to place our problems, but then different ways of solving them. Whether you look at the infinitude of living things that are around us and the ecosystems that allow them to thrive, that have to be in equilibrium in order for everything to keep going. And that's a big thing. I think a lot of young people feel that already. They somehow know that intuitively. And for an older person like me, it's something that I've had to learn through time. And from my going to, you know, national parks and stuff and seeing native people, right, with old knowledge and with great acceptance of they are part of nature. When I went to the Grand Canyon, they said, don't play music for us, play for Mother Canyon. Wow, what a concept, right? You're playing into nature because the energy flows back into nature. And with the Wabanakis in Maine in Acadia National Park, their purpose in life is to bring the sun out every day. So when you participate in a dawn ceremony at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they say the prayers, they play the music, I play the music with them, and then we talk in a circle. Suddenly you have politicians, governors, interior secretary, native people, scientists, you know, park rangers, all sitting in a large circle talking about their experience. So it's not about politics, environmentalists, you know, I need to have this done, but rather this is what we have experienced together. We start from a completely different footing. And that's when, you know, the culture can start a vibrant conversation that talks about what is our common nature. And I think we get much further.
You've said that it wasn't until age 49 that you realized you really wanted to be a musician. Can you tell us about that and what keeps you motivated today?
For me, it was like being a musician was like, okay, you go through the paces, you go to school, you start playing concerts, and then, you know, you're in it. And you don't question and say, oh, this is what I want to be. So I always wonder what I would have been if I had not started so young. And I was interested in all kinds of things. I was kind of undecided until I realized, to your earlier question, the music as a lens to explore the world, I realized that's possible. And so all my interests could be there with music as the engine and the lens through which I can explore what I think is my main interest is humans, you know, human nature. Today, I'm motivated more by, because I'm 67, I'm thinking, I'm in touch with four generations. I have three grandchildren. So Native people think seven generations. I'm thinking four generations pretty easily. And it's really not about what I can do in the world, but more like how things get transmitted from generation to another and what makes for generation to thrive. And part of exploring nature is, well, nature is also very long term. And so feels like the right thing to do at this stage in my life.
This is Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. In many ways, you are truly an American treasure. Among your Grammys and myriad awards, you've been honored with the Presidential Medal of Freedom and a Kennedy Center honor. But when you were introduced to President Kennedy as a child after moving to the U.S. from France, you were described as one of the many foreigners drawn to this country. You know, regardless of where Asian Americans come from, how long we've been here, there's long been a perception of otherness. Can you tell me how you may have experienced otherness over the years and how it's shaped your heart?
I think we all experience otherness multiple times every day in society, right? So you go through your day, you do whatever, and you enter into different bubbles. And in that bubble, you're either on the inside or you're on the outside. I think for me, the great engine or the great tool that has been incredibly helpful was culture. Because if I can understand what the priority values are of any bubble I enter into, I can immediately place myself within those priorities and say, okay, where might I fit in? Culture always is able to turn the other into us. Now, that's pretty huge, right? We're discussing fractures all over the world using culture. If I know, for example, what your habits are, what you treasure, what you value, and I find the intersection between what I value, what I treasure, and suddenly I'm in. What I'm not in is when there's no trust. It's like, you're a foreigner, I know nothing about you, and therefore I view you with suspicion. And part of code switching is to understand enough and to have the other person understand enough so that we could like code switch together. Some people talk about the hybridity of identity. I think we're all multiple things. I was just in Hawaii as to do one of the nature things, and I set foot onto this amazing ship, a large canoe called the Hokulea. It's part of the Pacific Voyaging Society, where young people learn the ancient Polynesian techniques of sailing using wave navigation, where the Pacific becomes their pond because they know how to get everywhere just looking at waves and stars with no instruments. Now, how amazing that they could welcome me into their fold and somehow allow me to participate for a moment to see how that world is reconstructed, a technique that was almost lost.
I remember seeing you on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood as a kid. I know other kids met you through Sesame Street and Arthur. I want to see what you remembered of those experiences.
When people ask me, you know, you're old, you've done a lot of things in your life, what are you proud of? And I will always say that one of the things I'm most proud of is that I appeared on those shows. And I'll tell you exactly why. It is because when I appeared on Mr. Rogers and on Sesame Street and on Arthur, I was a guest in their space, in the child's space. So they accepted me as their guest. That's permanent. I am actually in their territory. And so the interactions there are they own, right? Culture turns the other into us. They allow me in their space, and it became a safe space for them. I automatically am part of their lives. It's not just about teachable moments. It's about experienced moments, right? That then they own. That I can't think of anything more valuable.
Circling back to culture, both you and your sister, acclaimed musician and physician Yo Cheng Hwa, have talked about growing up with tiger parents, which I think a lot of Asian Americans can relate to. How is your parenting style different?
I'm more like a pussycat than a tiger. It's much more dialogue than monologue. Asian parents often talk at a child, or parents sometimes do that, right? Yeah. I loved Mr. Rogers because when Mr. Rogers talks to you, he talks to you at eye level. You know, so a child who's not very tall usually has to look up to an adult. But when you talk eye level, you are actually talking at the same level as the child. And for a child, I think being respected is actually quite important. You know, their sense of justice revolves around how well they are actually listened to and respected. And of course, it can be difficult when the question is, why daddy, why daddy, why daddy, every time. But if you actually take that seriously, and I think, you know, you develop, they are both your child, but they're also companions. And essentially, they become, you know, you treat them as an equal, but then things are discussable. I think respect is huge.
We've talked about so many things. Is there something you'd want us to know to leave us with that we didn't talk about?
I just think that sometimes the hardest things to do are also the easiest things to say. You know, it's like, treat the other person like you would want to be treated. You know, I think that's such a basic thing. And as we go through our daily lives, look for the invisible people that are actually helping you. They're always invisible people, and make sure you make them visible. You acknowledge people's presence and their dignity.
Thank you for the reminder, and thank you for joining us, Yo-Yo.
Happy Asian American Pacific Islanders Month, okay?
Same to you.
Thank you.
Yo-Yo Ma is bringing Our Common Nature to Knoxville, Tennessee on May 26th with Our Common Nature, an Appalachian celebration with Yo-Yo Ma and friends. He's also recently launched a new virtual conversation program called Music, Art, Life. Let us know what you think of this episode by sending us a note at podcasts@usatoday.com. Thanks to Shannon Ray Green and Alexis Gusson for producing this. And thank you for listening to USA Today's 5 Things.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.